Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
All right, it is my pleasure now to be joined on the 49ers Insider Podcast by a guy that, I don't know, Dante Whitner, maybe it's a good thing you're not playing anymore because of these new rules in the NFL, but we'll get to all that later. Thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what are you doing these days, Dante?
Right now, I'm doing a lot of traveling. I own a few adult care facilities and Northeast Ohio area. I'm actually transitioning into getting some homes for transgenders that's coming from the Army, veterans, ex-veterans, continuing to work out and, taking some interviews for some TV, maybe some TV gigs.
How did you get into that as far as those businesses and those the activity that you're starting now?
Well, just fishing around and looking for different businesses that I was very passionate about where I could not only make money, but I could also help change people's lives. And I came across the adult care facility, and what it really is a lot of people call them group homes. Some people call them residential facilities. Our classification is adult care facilities for the mentally ill. And majority of my residents, they have some type of mental illness. So they have no family pretty much, and they get all of their assistance from the government. So without a home, they'll probably be homeless. So I thought it was a good idea to be able to start up a few of those. All of my residents are happy. I'm happy with the business, and it's going great.
Well, good luck with that. It sounds like a very worthwhile venture that you're entering into.
It is.
So now let's go to your career. 11 years in the NFL. You had three very memorable seasons with the 49ers. And when you look back on your time with the 49ers, 2011, 2012, 2013, what kind of sticks out?
What really sticks out in my mind is how we all came together in a short period of time. We all worked our butts off to go out there and obtain our goals. And that's what we did. And it was all led by Coach Harbaugh and his staff. And then we had a bunch of great veterans on those football teams that came to work each and every day. They had fun with one another. But when it was time to go out there and take care of business on Sunday, we went out there and did it. So that's the thing that sticks in my mind the most is how fast we came together and how long we stuck it out. And making it to three NFC championships, a Super Bowl, coming very, very close to winning it. I'll cherish those moments forever.
Yeah, 2011, that was the year of the lockout. So you guys didn't have an off-season program. You pretty much hit the ground running at the start of training camp. What was it about that team that enabled you guys to come together so quickly and go as far as you did?
Well, we had a bunch of individuals that wanted to go out there and prove themselves. We had guys like Carlos Rogers. He came in. I came in myself after signing late in free agency. You had Deshaun Golson. He was going through a contract phase, and he wasn't coming around. We had a bunch of guys that wanted to go out there individually and prove themselves. And the only way to go out there individually and prove yourself is to go out there collectively as a team, put the work in and win, and then everybody will get noticed. So we really understood that, and that's what allowed us to come together, just everybody being individuals, understanding their teammates, wanting to go out there and put it all together, and we did. And then Coach Harbaugh, he had some different type of tactics to motivate us, but they always seemed to work.
What were some of those tactics?
Just he had some crazy sayings. Just the number one thing that he used to motivate us was, what was the saying that we said all the time? Who has it better than us? And he would always go and he would reference back to when he was a kid And he really came up, and his father and mother, they would always say, who had it better than us? Even though they lived in a small house, even though they probably had 2-3 bedrooms where they all had to share. Just putting that into your mind is nobody has it better than us. Whether we don't have everything we've always wanted, nobody has it better than us. And that's how he brought us together with that saying, who has it better than us? We didn't have the biggest weight room. We didn't have the fanciest facilities, but we put the work in. We went out there and believed, and we won.
Coach Harbaugh, very polarizing guy. You know, a lot of people, you know, some people loved him, some people didn't love him. Could you see that? I mean, could you see that he rubbed some people the wrong way? Or for you, did you see just the positive side of him?
Yeah, you have to see the positive side and the way that he rubbed people. And a lot of the best coaches out there, the best motivators, they don't always use normal tactics. Sometimes they're going to rub people the wrong way to get their point across. And to get the job done. And that's what he did. And that's why he's been a winner everywhere he's been. That's why he's going to continue to be a winner. And, you know, I just wish him the best of luck.
Even when they play Ohio State?
No luck when they play Ohio State. I'll tell you that. But any other game on the schedule, I hope they win it. But when we play Ohio State, absolutely not.
Yeah, so that was 2011. You guys kind of take the NFL by storm. Next year in 2012, everybody, I think, kind of thought that you guys would make a run, and you certainly did all the way to the Super Bowl. Just how often do you think of that game and how it, you know, it kind of got away? It was there for the taking, just, what, 5 yards away from potentially a Super Bowl victory. Does that kind of stick in your craw after all these years?
Yeah, it does. But actually, at the moment, I'm currently reading this book. It's called Daring Greatly, and it speaks about the winning, the losing, any aspect in life and how it shapes you. So now I'm starting to understand it. But for a long time, I would think about it every day, get upset about it, always think about what if, what could I have done better, what could we have, as a team, done better. You know, so it's difficult, but... you know, I continue to think about it sometimes, but there's nothing that we can do about it. I still have those memories. I still cherish that the NFC Championship ring that we have. I wish it could have been the big one, but, you know, it's just we couldn't get it done.
Yeah, then the next year, another heartbreaking loss to end the season and end your time with the 49ers up in Seattle. I mean, what did you think about that team and where you guys could have gone?
Truthfully, I felt like we could have won the Super Bowl all 3 years. The heartbreaking loss that we had to the New York Giants when we fumbled the punt in overtime, I felt like we won that game. We had an opportunity to win the Super Bowl. 2011, when we get 5 yards from the goal line to go in and win it, we could have won that game. Going up to Seattle, playing the way that we did, having an opportunity late in the football game, I feel like we had an opportunity to win that game. We possibly could have won the Super Bowl. So I feel like we had a lot of squandered opportunities, but you have to give the hats off to the Seattle Seahawks. We had some battles. We had some brutal battles between us and Seattle. We were mirrors of each other from the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball to special teams to pretty much the head coach. We were mirrors of each other. So all 3 years, I felt like we had an opportunity to win it. We could have won it. We should have, but we didn't.
And then it kind of got away from this organization pretty quickly. You were gone in 2014. The team moved into Levi Stadium and kind of, you know, stumbled around to about a 500 record. And then the wheels fell off after Jim Harbaugh left. Did you kind of pay attention from afar what was going on with the 49ers?
Well, I did pay attention from afar. Actually, I was going through free agency at the time, and I actually did an event for ownership of the 49ers in the Youngstown area, and I asked a question to one of the officials, and somebody, I'm not going to say the name, but it was one of the officials from the San Francisco 49ers, said that they actually regret the decision that went down with Jim Harbaugh and everything, and the way that it went down, they said they actually regretted it. But I knew that that would possibly happen because Jim Harbaugh was the engine that ran that football team, and his tactics and the practice schedules and the intense practices and so much film study and so many notes and things to take home. And it was just, he was the engine that ran it. And I know there's some people over there, they do regret it, but we can't change the past. And I just have to move forward. I just wish them the best. Hopefully, I saw the way that last season ended. I saw the win streak that they went on. Hopefully, they can build from here and get back to the championship.
Yeah, so in 2014, you leave the organization, or I should say you weren't re-signed, and then they brought in Antoine Bethea. But during your time, you played with Deshaun Goldson. Your last year, you lined up with Eric Reed. Are you surprised that Eric Reed, you know, at this point in the offseason, that not only Eric Reed, but I mean, look at some other safeties that are out there. Kenny Vaccaro is still a free agent. Trey Boston. Are you surprised at just it's how difficult it seems to be for veteran safeties to get work these days?
Well, I'm not surprised. Nowadays, they're looking for more cover guys. The game is transitioning away from being a physical game. It's going more finesseful. It's going more speed. They don't want the guys who really line up in the box or can be big thumpers really on the football field. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of these guys aren't signed. With Eric Reed, I truly wholeheartedly believe that him taking a knee hurt him. Just him taking that knee hurt him. And I think everybody knows that. I think that nobody will come out and say that. But I truly believe that hurt him. He has all the skills to be able to play in the National Football League. He should have been a first-day free agent guy. He can do multiple things. He can play linebacker. He can line up at nickelback in some packages. Some you can even put him at corner. You can put him in a deep safety. You can blitz him. He'll play some special teams. He's a good character, hardworking young man, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be on an NFL roster.
Do you think he will be on an NFL roster?
In my heart, I think so, but, you know, I really don't know at this point. There's no reason why he shouldn't be on a team right now. So I don't know if people have come together and said, don't sign these guys or, you know, what they're doing. But I truly wholeheartedly believe that he's being blackballed.
And now this message.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
You know, there was a rule change made this offseason that basically says that it's a penalty if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. This rule is, I'm sure it's controversial, but it's also, it seems like it's going to be very difficult to legislate that. And I mean, there could be a penalty thrown on basically every play. What do you think when you heard that rules change, what did you think about where it's going?
First thing I thought is NFL is trying to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. They're trying to protect themselves from more lawsuits in the future, from players not wanting to play football, from parents not wanting their children to play football out of fear of head injuries and neck injuries. The second thing is you can't play football that way. Absolutely not. From a child, we've always been told the lowest man wins. And in football, it's so fast that you can't really tiptoe in there and say, okay, let me not lower my head. You're either going to get ran over or somebody's going to get injured than if they would have put their head down. The third thing is, you know, when I played, me and Deshaun, Deshaun took some of his fines and actually paid them. My fines, every time I hit somebody, the NFL, they would throw a flag, they would come back and they would fine me. And then on Monday or Tuesday morning, they would send in a video and a letter saying, oh, this wasn't a fine. We're not going to take the money from them. So I do think that these things should be automatically replayed. Similar to college football, I don't know how they're going to do it with the time and how it affects the length of the game. I think they need to do that. And there's no way that they're going to be able to legislate this rule, because every play on the football field, somebody is putting their helmet down or lowering their shoulder to make a tackle or to run over an opponent. So I don't really know how they're going to do it. This is going to be a weird season for everybody, I guess.
Did you say you never got fined? I mean, I know you got fined publicly, but they never took the money out of your paycheck?
Yeah, they never took the money. They would always come back on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, send in a video and say, hey, Whitner, he wasn't illegal for this fine, so they didn't take the money. They didn't come out and publicly say, hey, they were wrong either. So people continue to this day to think that the NFL took $200,000-$400,000 from me when they didn't take $1. Wow.
One play, very famous play that you made against the New Orleans Saints in that playoff game in 2011, I guess it would have been January of 2012, that wasn't a penalty. It was a legal hit at the time. But now, I mean, I'm assuming that that would be an ejection. Your hit on Pierre Thomas that caused the fumble very early in that game, basically saved a touchdown. What do you remember about that play? And what do you think about whether that play should continue to be legal or not?
Well, that play, I actually remember it. It was, I think we were in like a cover two. Our linebackers were playing like man underneath. Running back out of the backfield, Drew Brees threw it to him. He beat one of our backers. And I just wanted to get there and dislodge him from the football. So he saw me at the last minute. He actually tried to put his head down a little to lower his shoulder on me, and I got lower than him. I remember the ball coming out and just walking off the football field. Nowadays, in the game of football, that's going to be a fine. Maybe an ejection. So I don't know how you legislate that. But if I don't hit him that way, maybe he topples over me and rolls into the end zone and scores a touchdown. Or if I try to hit him low, maybe he jumps over me and dives into the end zone. At that point, I had only one choice, and it was to hit him the way that I did. Nowadays, they might call it a fine. That's why the game of football is starting to, you know, going more finesseful. I think eventually, if it keeps going the way that it's going now, you're going to have to play with leather helmets again.
Do you watch the 49ers much? Have you watched the safeties they have on this current team with Jimmy Ward and Jaquiski Tartt and Adrian Colbert?
Yes, I do. I think that they're all talented. They're all talented in what they do. I believe that they're going to try Jimmy Ward at corner a lot more and play the other guys in the deep secondary. I believe that they're young. I believe that they're hungry. And I believe that with the offense scoring points and having those young guys on the back end, they can generate a pass rush and they can go out there and have a lot of success. So I've been keeping an eye on those guys. I have to watch them a little bit more to break it down in detail. But from what I know and from what I've seen over the past 2 years, I believe that they all have top-notch qualities and they can get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about kind of the struggles this team went through after you left, but everything appears to be on the rise now with Kyle Shanahan as the head coach and John Lynch as the general manager. Do you have much experience going up against a Kyle Shanahan run offense? And if you do, like, you know, what's your impression of the kind of dilemmas that his offense can put in a defense under?
His offense has always been about tricking the defense. And when I say tricking the defense, he wants to manipulate you. He wants to get you with that play action. He wants to get guys on the defensive side of the ball. He wants their eyes to be everywhere. He wants to run a lot of deep over routes and deep stop routes in the middle of the field. He will take shots, a lot of shots. I was in Cleveland with Shanahan, and he was our offensive coordinator. And the things that he did with Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel, getting us to, I think we had 8 wins that year. We were actually first in our division all the way up until maybe week 10. He can really, really get the job done with his offensive philosophy. A lot of times, you know, you get offensive coordinators, they'll get out there and they'll just call plays or they'll duplicate what somebody else do. You have coaches around the National Football League that tries to duplicate a lot of things that Shanahan does. Even Atlanta, the offense that Atlanta has and instilled and the way that they can gimmick you and hit you with the play action and get the linebacker sucked up, it's the same thing that he has in San Francisco. And if they can put up points in San Francisco, I believe they can make the playoffs again this year.
Did you get a chance to know him very well when you guys were together in Cleveland?
I didn't really get a chance to know him that well. We would joke around and I would see him at practice, talk to him here and there. But we didn't spend an extensive amount of time together. I do know that he's extremely hard worker. A lot of the times, you know, when the last guys are out of the building, you have guys that are the last guys and you have guys that say they're the last guys. He's the last guy out a lot of times. And he's the guy that's there with the quarterbacks first thing in the morning to make sure that they understand the game plan, understand that they understand that the team goes where the quarterback goes. And that's why he's been such a good quarterback coach for a significant amount of time. And that's why his offensive philosophies work everywhere he goes. And I look forward to him continuing that in San Francisco.
Well, I mean, the 49ers and, you know, the longtime rival Seattle appear to be going in opposite directions. You know, you were here facing Seattle twice a year for those three seasons. Of course, you never lined up against that Seattle defense, but I'm sure you know all about them. Just what were your thoughts when you kind of saw the developments of the offseason where, you know, Richard Sherman ends up with the 49ers just over the weekend? Cam Chancellor announces that he's not going to be able to play football again. Just what do you think about that dynamic, that rivalry, and one of your old nemesis is, you know, with Richard Sherman now wearing 49ers colors?
I think there's a sad ending to a great era of hard-nosed football in the NFC West. I truly believe that Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers during that time period was two of the best defenses and football teams that, you know, you can throw out on the football field. That's why we had the type of battles that we had all the time. I truly believe that it's just a case of reality. You have to understand, the National Football League, if you're a good player and a good team, other teams are going to come and take your good players. And guys are going to get injured. Guys are going to get older. Guys are going to leave in free agency. And it's going to be the team or the management that can draft younger players and get cheaper players and make them into all pros and into pro bowlers and into top-notch guys that's going to continue to win in National Football League. Just like the injury to Chancellor, it happens. You know, I don't know how many times, it doesn't matter if you're 230, 240 pounds, how many times you can go out there and hit somebody with your neck with the amount of force that he brings and something doesn't happen. It's just the reality of the game. I'm glad that he wasn't paralyzed or anything serious. I'm glad that he had the opportunity to change his family's life. But it's just a reality. Even with Richard Sherman, with him going down and tearing his Achilles during the last football season, he pretty much knew that with the amount of money that he had left on his contract, his age, he knew that he was going to be shipped. It's just a reality of the business. I believe that he'll have a full recovery and bounce back, and he'll be a great piece for San Francisco secondary.
Well, I mean, Dante, you talk about, you know, players putting their bodies on the line. I mean, nobody did it more than you did. How are you feeling these days?
I feel great. I was able to make it out of the game of football without having any surgeries, knock on wood. I was able to make it out without having a lot of concussions. I probably had two concussions over my 11-year career. So I feel great. My body feels great. I still stay in shape. I'm actually still like I can play. Somewhere in my heart, I still want to play, but deep down, I know that I need to make a transition, and I believe that it's going to come soon.
Do you train as if an NFL team could call you?
Yes, I train as if an NFL team is going to call, but you know, it's the reality of the business. At a certain age, they want younger players, so I understand that. A lot of players understand that. It's all about the transition.
Well, it seems like you're making a nice transition, doing some good work. Dante, I really appreciate you joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
A big thanks to Dante Whitner for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast. Nice to catch up with him. And now we're going to go to our Twitter mailbag. SJ Sports Fan, at SJ Sports Fan, asked a question about George Kittle, who was banged up a little bit his rookie season, but he had a very good offseason. And the question is, how much of an increase in production do you expect to see from him in 2018? And what will Garrett Celek's role be? Will they both take snaps? Well, I just talked to John Embry, the assistant head coach and tight ends coach with the 49ers, right at the end of the offseason program. And he kind of sees these two guys, George Kittle and Garrett Celek, as being interchangeable. And when he refers to the tight ends, he talks about a tight ends by committee. And if you combine their stats from last year, it was 64 catches for 850 yards and 6 touchdowns. That's pretty good production for a tight end. So the 49ers, I don't think, really think of, you know, Kittle putting up those kinds of numbers or Celek individually putting up those kinds of numbers. I think they see them as kind of a pretty good balance, with Garrett Celek being the more traditional tight end, George Kittle runs better, gets down the field better, and is better in one-on-one matchups. And then you also have Cole Hikutini thrown into the mix. He's a little bit more fluid of an athlete than those other two guys, and he has good hands, but he's not as good in the run blocking. So one of the things that we looked at in the offseason was, would the 49ers try to improve the tight end position in the draft? And one of the things that Embry said was he didn't think that there were very many guys out there who would have made the 49ers tight end group better. And he said, you just don't add players to add players. You need to add players who are going to step in and make a difference. And so I think Kittle has a chance to have a better year. I think he'll kind of slowly kind of take the baton from Garrett Celek. But right now, both of those guys are being counted upon to both see significant action in the 49ers offense. At DD Broussard asked about the NFL allowing teams to wear alternate jerseys for up to three games. The question is, will the 49ers take advantage of that and wear the throwbacks for three games, or mix and match the black alternatives? Well, the plan as it stands right now is for the 49ers just to wear their all-white alternate jersey one time this season. And a while back at the State of the Franchise event, they unveiled the throwback from the 1994 Super Bowl season, and that uniform will be worn at one home game this season. And that game will be Week 7, a Sunday night game against the LA Rams. The 49ers have a Week 9 Thursday night game against the Raiders, also at Levi's Stadium. They plan on wearing their traditional jersey for that game. Now, the black jersey, the black uniforms remain available for the team to wear in the future. But right now, the plan is for only one alternate jersey to be worn this season, and that would be Week 7 against the Rams. You've been listening to the 49ers Insider Podcast. If you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play to subscribe. And please give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. We'll be back next week with another great edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast. Thank you for listening.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.